You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Delighted to be joined by our next guest. He is the executive director of Back 40 Action. Will Westmoreland is here. Good morning, Will. We're going to play a clip for you before we even get going. Will, this is a clip from the Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins.
Oh, no, no.
No.
We can play that one. Yeah, yeah.
The Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins, talking about the fact that the U.S. is bailing out Argentina with $20 billion, and then Argentina essentially undercut the U.S. and is now selling soybeans to China. But Brooke Rollins says this is a great thing. Calvin, let's play that clip, please.
Can you tell us a little bit more about President Trump's plan to use tariff money to pay farmers? What does that look like? How much are we talking about? How long will that program last?
You know, it is a very elegant solution, right? The amount of tariff money that is coming into our country is stunning. The president had a vision. He's effectuating the vision. The vision is pretty remarkable. The whole entire world economy is now realigning around American products, which is incredible. But again, to this moment of uncertainty, the ability to offset any payments to the farmers through potential tariff revenue is really where the president wants us to head, and that's what we're looking at very soon. One more.
So, Will, everything is good. Everything is good for our farmers. We can't sell our soybeans. There's no market for that. But Brooke Rollins, Secretary of Agriculture, says it's all elegant. It's all great. So what are you hearing from fellow farmers in your part of the country?
Well, Jane, I've never done this before, but I've got to correct you on one thing. We are the world's leader in one department of agriculture now that Donald Trump is president and Brooke Rollins is Secretary of Agriculture, and that's word salad. We've taken the lead.
We're number one
worldwide in word salad.
We're number one.
Give or take, what's our share in the marketplace there? Is that like a 99
for word salad?
I'd give it a 99.9
plus. Okay, yeah. All right.
We got it cornered.
USA. All right.
We do. I'm always amazed when I hear, you know, Brooke Rollins speak or the president speak about agriculture because, and I'm going to get to your question, but the truth of the matter is, I just want everybody to know this. And this is a conversation I have regularly with the farmers and ranchers where I live. There is no tariff fund. There's no money from the tariffs sitting in a big fund somewhere waiting to be spent on American farmers and ranchers. And I don't know how many different ways the media, different business experts across the country, experts like me in rural advocacy. I don't know how many different ways we can say it. That's called taxpayer money because it's the businesses that import the products that pay the tariff fees.
Yes.
And then they pass that along to us as customers and we pay that. So it's taxpayer money that's going to be paying for any kind of bailout that's done. And you can try to wrap it in a pretty bow. You can try to paint it a different way, but it's taxpayer money that will pay for those bailouts if they occur, just like they always have in the past. Now, to get to the answer that you were looking for, we had a great, and it may be the clip you were going to play, but we had a great town hall meeting with Mark Alford, who is my congressperson in the 4th Congressional District here in the state of Missouri. And there was a 2,400-acre soybean farmer, corn farmer, that stood up in that meeting. I'm going to clean it up a little bit for NPR, but he looked at Mark Alford and he said, "You need to quit kissing Donald Trump's rear end. He's not doing anything for the farmer. He's not working on behalf of the American farmer." Now, this guy just lives his farm is just a couple of miles away from my farm. And I know who he is. I've never met him in person, But I was having Saturday breakfast down at the local watering hole not far from my farm, and everybody was sitting around the table just aghast because I live in an 80% Donald Trump support county. And basically they were saying that they knew that he had voted for Donald Trump at least twice.
Yeah.
So I think that tells you everything you need to know about what's happening with farmers and ranchers. I read a poll just the other day that Donald Trump has lost about 6 to 9% of his support in rural America since he came into office during this term. A lot of that is in unaffiliated voters, but still a couple of percent of that is in Republican, you know, rank and file. So things are not good. Everybody's scared to death. All you have to do is go to a town hall meeting anywhere in farm country. You can see it in their eyes. You can hear it in what they're saying. They're very worried that we're going to see a record-breaking level of bankruptcies. And we talked the last time I was on, anytime that happens, you see a spike in bad health and suicides and lost farms and ranches. And it's just a big snowball that gets bigger and bigger as it goes down the hill.
I mean, when we talk about farming, whether it's with you or with Darren Von Ruden or Pam Yonke, there's a certain reverence I come to it because I am not a farmer. I know nothing about farming, and I never want to assume anything about the mentality of a farmer, especially when it comes to who they vote for. But there always is the question is, if the man who ran for president three times, won twice, is not done enough for the farmers, what is the appeal? I mean, we saw a bailout in 2018 of $19 billion after everything was said and done, and now we're heading right back down that road. And I want to know, what is it about, whether it's Trump, MAGA, or the Republican GOP, that just keeps them in to say, well, we can trust them? I don't understand it, and I don't want to assume, because I don't want to insult anyone's intelligence either.
Well, let me take off my farmer cap and put on my political consultant hat for a minute. So I will tell you this, that, and the bailout, by the way, was $27 billion during the last year of the Trump administration. And it continued on for 2 years into the Biden administration because the farm economy was so bad as a result of these tariffs in the first round. If you look at the polling, and I know there was a book that came out a few years ago that was called, you know, Rural Rage, and it painted a really bleak picture from a racism perspective, et cetera, of rural America. And there's no doubt that some of that exists out here, just like it exists everywhere else. But I will tell you that when you look at the polling for rural America is very similar to the polling for urban inner city America. And it's more the politics of resentment. You don't fix our roads. You don't fix our bridges. We don't have good internet. You don't take care of our schools. And what we learned in the last election is that people like to vote for the person screaming the loudest that they're going to fix all of that, whether they fix it or not, or they sit on their hands and they don't vote, which was a huge problem in the last election. And, you know, I will tell you, I always say this, don't put my face on Mount Rushmore, because on election night, even though I say we need to meet people where they are, on election night, I looked at my sons and I said, well, I guess we're all going to have to eat out of trash cans in rural America before we figure out what's going on here. But the truth of the matter is that a lot of people in rural America, when they vote, they really did believe he was just going to get rid of the criminals that were coming here illegally. They really did believe that if we were to let him put these tariffs in place, that it would bring manufacturing back to rural America, which has been decimated. And what's happened is the same thing that happened before.
Yes.
Manufacturing jobs are accelerating in their disappearance rate. Our foreign markets, 33% of our foreign agricultural markets have disappeared. So all I can tell you is, Will Rogers once said, when they asked him, how do people in rural America learn? He said, some learn by reading, some learn by observation, and the rest just have to pee on the electric fence for themselves. And
that's one
and
way
there's
of
a lot
it.
Of that third one. Yeah, there's a lot of that third one going on right now. What I will say is different this time, Greg, is we're seeing the swing in support moving away from the president. And you're seeing this angst out here that even if we do farm subsidies, we're just going to be right back in the same boat next year and the year after and the year after. So, yeah, they had to hit their thumb with the hammer three times, but it does seem like that third time is making a difference.
If you're just joining us on Matt and Air on Air, Will Westmoreland is our guest. He's the executive director of Back 40 Action. He has been on the show before. He's a farmer in southwestern Missouri. And we're talking about the Trump tariffs and what it's like in his part of the world and what he's hearing from fellow farmers. There is a lot of angst, Will, again, about people on the left trying to understand rural voters and why it seems they continually vote against their own interests, because Democrats are the ones who want to invest in infrastructure. President Biden had that big infrastructure plan that went to both red and blue districts. And yet, again, they came back to Trump knowing what he did to them the first time around, and they came back for more.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, one of the things about rural America, well, let me say a couple of things. First of all, whenever you see the numbers that rural America voted 70% for Donald Trump, the numbers are actually a little bit better than that, because what they're doing is they're taking a look at the top 200 counties, agricultural counties in the country, and they're pulling that number from the voting results just in those top 200 counties. The truth of the matter is, I can go right outside of where you are in Wisconsin and there are rural voters. I can go right outside of New York City and there are rural voters. It's probably somewhere around 61% of rural America that actually voted for Donald Trump, which is still way too many people, right? The good news is there have been a lot of folks out here like me that have been fighting against this for years. And I will tell you, people are starting to listen. We've got a lot of people that are, you know, have contacted us here at the Back 40 that have said, you know, listen, I didn't get my reimbursements for rotational grazing. I lost my farm because of it. I'm ready to work with anybody that will help us get good agricultural policy in place, that kind of thing. The other thing that's really scaring people are these changes in the ACA credits out there.
Yes.
Our good friends at the National Rural Health Association, who we work with very closely on healthcare issues, basically we're going to see a 37% increase in the number of people in rural America that don't have health insurance at the end of the year because of these cuts.
And that's something that we have to keep reiterating. You know, the whether people are utilizing Medicaid or Medicaid, I'm going to say for sure, but also with these ACA increases, they want to paint these individuals on the ACA and on Medicaid as shiftless layabouts in cities doing nothing, absolutely taking advantage of the system. But that's not true at all. These are working folks who live all over the country, red state, blue state, rural, urban, suburban. They're everywhere. And when you try to paint it with that kind of brush, once again, folks in the rural areas, as we're seeing with all of these cuts, they're always having some of the most devastating effects on people in the rural area. And we need to keep talking about that, because the politicians like to get on their podiums in front of a cornfield and tell them how much you, Will Westmoreland, are the backbone of America, but they cut programs that make it harder for you to even live.
Because a lot of farmers get their health coverage through the ACA.
This one does. I was notified a few weeks ago that my insurance is going to go from $1,700 a month to over $3,000.
Oh.
And we're looking at seeing that across the board. The bottom line is this. We use it more than anybody else in the country. It's going to impact us worse than any other part of the country. There are two bills out there right now, Senate Bill 46 and H.R. 247. Both of those are designed to put those credits back, so we need to get our politicians to do that.
We're going to continue our conversation with Will Westmoreland, Executive Director of Back 40 Action. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air, coming to you on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach. Our resident young person, Calvin, on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We're joined by Will Westmoreland, the executive director of Back 40 Auction. He is a farmer in southwestern Missouri, talking about Trump's tariffs, also talking about who utilizes the ACA.
And you said something earlier before we went to the commercial about the amount of who uses it more than anybody else. I want you to repeat that because I want people to hear it again. And also, you just sent me a message saying that the CDC cuts have had a particular impact on rural America. Can you also speak on that?
Yeah, I sure can. So when it comes to the ACA tax credits as a percentage of the population, we use it more in rural America than our suburban and urban brothers and sisters. So the impacts that are going to be felt in rural America are going to be even greater as a percentage of the population. So for instance, in rural America, we're going to see premiums nearly double. So on average, what that's going to mean is even with those previous tax cuts being removed, the average person in rural America is going to see their insurance through the ACA go up by about $133 per month. So you can do the math on what that's going to mean over the course of the year. We also, a lot of people don't know this, but we get an additional credit in rural America because insurance costs more here. We've got fewer facilities. We've got less choices. We have to travel further.
Sure.
So we get an extra credit of about 28%. In these tax credits that's applied on top of what everybody else gets, and those go away as well. So we're losing a subsidy base that's the same as everybody, plus an additional 28%. Basically, on average, it's going to increase healthcare in rural America by about $900 a year. So, and then, yeah, I heard you talking with your previous guest about the cuts at the CDC. This is really critical in rural America. And it's really kind of scary, Jane, to be honest with you, because some of the programs that are handled through the CDC in rural America are the programs that are the frontline defense against bird flu and swine flu.
Which is so, those are critical.
Right. And bird flu is really scary because we've been talking for years. If we see that jump from birds into humans, it could be worse than what we saw with COVID-19, which was bad enough. So some of these CDC programs where we're losing frontline personnel, contrary to what J.D. Vance said, and where we're losing funding are in these critical areas of, you know, virus control out on farms and ranches across the country. The other thing is, in addition to these tax credits that we're talking about, the CDC has huge health emphasis in rural America. They've got special asthma programs for kids in rural America. They've got breast cancer focus for women in rural America. It's just program after program after program where funds are specifically designated to go to rural America because we're more unhealthy than the rest of the country. We've got more chronic long-term issues, heart disease, diabetes. In addition to that, because we live in spread out areas, we've got to drive further to get to places,
sure,
which means we're in cars more. We drive faster. We have farm accidents like the one I had. So these CDC cuts hurt us even worse. To that point you were making earlier, Greg, about, you know, why did they vote this way? All this stuff is coming to a head now. And I don't know what's happening in the media ecosphere, but it seems like a lot of people in rural America are stepping out of the echo chamber and they're getting this news that they haven't been getting before about what these cuts are going to mean. Some of that, I think, is the conservative news outlets because of, I know, hand to God, I never thought I'd agree with her, but because of what Marjorie Taylor Greene said, I think some of this is getting into the conservative ecosphere and people are scared.
That's really interesting that you say that. Well, it is. And I do think that's why civic media was created, was to try and counter some of this misinformation that has been spread, particularly across our rural areas, for so very long. They've only been getting one side of the news
for decades, for
30 plus years. So that's kind of always been the goal of civic media, is to bring information to people who are not hearing the other side.
And I think
and actually factual things.
And I think it's important, you know, you bring up that point, is that we also have to look to the closure of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Those non-NPR PBS stations that are out there in rural America who rely on funding to bring the news, not right or left, just the news, they need to be funded. They need to be supported. And it's important to give what you can to them, because that's how some people get their news.
Information is power.
Yep.
Information is power. We only have about 90 seconds left. Will, we talked about this before and we're going to have to talk about it again. Bankruptcy has got to be looming for a lot of our farmers now with this latest round of tariffs. And when we talked to you before, that seems to be the goal. Like J.D. Vance is an investor in Acre Trader.
Yeah, you know, I just made a trip to Washington, D.C. this past week because I wanted to go out and see who I could meet with. And while I was there, I had a follow-up meeting. I think I'd mentioned the last time I was on that I'd attended a sustainable agriculture investment seminar in Washington, D.C., where they thought the bankruptcy number would be somewhere around 13 to 15%. Well, it's not gotten any better. The conversation I had the last few days in Washington, D.C. is that that number could now be as high as 23% among row crop farmers. And that is really scary in terms of the impact it's going to have on the food supply and that kind of thing. So I don't know how we're going to come out of this without some sort of bailout. But people need to remember, too, all this bailout is going to do is make farmers break even.
Right.
There's not going to be any profitability there. It's going to allow them to pay off their operating loans, et cetera. But it's not going to create profit, and nobody farms just to break even.
Will Westmoreland has been our guest, the executive director, of Back 40 Action. You can see him on YouTube. Can't thank you enough, Will. We have to have you back again before it's been another 6 months. Really appreciate your time.
I always love coming on. Thank you.
Thank you. News coming up next. And then when we return, audio sorbet. Should adults get their birthday off from work?
Audio gripe.
Okay, audio gripe perhaps. That's coming up next on the Civic Media Radio Network. This is Matt Nair on Air. Stay with us. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, our one, our only Cal Zone on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Baseball tonight, baby, Game 3, Brewers hosting the Dodgers for Game 2 of the NLCS. Yes, Game 2. Our broadcast starts at 6:30. First pitch goes out about 7:08. You can listen to the game, but you have to listen on terrestrial radio.
Yeah.
So you can listen on WRCE in Richland Center, WISS in Oshkosh, and here in Racine and Kenosha on WRJN. Brewers hosting the Dodgers. Go Crew. Our broadcast starts at 6:30, first pitch at 7:08. I know, take a deep breath.
I know.
This is the portion of the show that we call Audio Sorbet, where we take a break from the news.
Well, let me tell you something, boy.
Yeah, that's...
Sometimes it slides into audio gripe. Which could be the case today.
Yeah, I think so.
Here is the question for today's Audio Sorbet, and there's a reason we bring this up.
There's a reason why Jane brings this up.
I saw this morning on social media.
Yeah, that great
this
bastion
exchange,
of truth.
Yes, of truth and standards. This exchange between an employer and a young woman about birthdays at work. Calvin, let's play this clip, please.
Maybe you should pay your employees more, too, then.
We pay pretty well.
I mean, I know someone's here working on their birthday.
Is it someone's birthday today?
You don't even know your own employees.
I don't know everyone's birthday. It's Colton's birthday?
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Colton.
Congratulations. Adults work on their birthday. I'm going to cry
for
him.
I work on a nonprofit, and at least they give us our birthdays off.
If he wanted to request it, he could have. That's
I wouldn't have to request it all.
Choice.
So here's my question. Should employers give their adult employees the day off for their birthday? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Should that be like companies have X number of holidays, right?
Mm-hmm.
Christmas, New Year's, Thanksgiving, 4th of July.
Yeah.
Should we all expect as adults to get our birthday off from work? 855-752-4842.
And the first person to call in and guess where Jane feels on this matter wins the prize of self-knowledge and retention of information.
I'm a baby boomer. That's
no,
the
you're
most...
not. You're a Gen Xer.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
You're.
I'm at the very tail end of the baby boom. I was born in 1960.
Then let go of that generation and hold on to Gen X, where we just don't care.
No, I'm a baby boomer. No, you don't get your birthday off at work as an adult.
Okay.
I think that is one of the silliest things I've ever heard.
Well, first of all, I think this whole clip is ridiculous. She sounds ridiculous.
She does.
And he didn't know his employee's birthday. You know what? I guarantee you that until they find out, my boss, my boss's boss, my boss's boss's boss, and my boss's 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 boss don't know when my birthday is.
Of course they don't know when our birthdays are.
That doesn't offend me or hurt my feelings, but when they find out, they say, happy birthday, Greg. And that feels nice. It's a moment of connection. The expectation of having your birthday off, I think that's a bit ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. I said to you earlier, I worked for one place in my life that gave you your birthday off as a paid holiday. It didn't impede upon your allotted amount throughout the year. So you basically got 2 weeks plus one day. That was your birthday. You got it off. And that was great. It was a nice little addition to it all. It made the job whatever, because I worked at a collectible store in Brookfield that was useless, but I am a young Gen Xer, and I think it's ridiculous to expect anything from a job is ridiculous, but to request it, I don't know. I mean, there's no harm in it. Well, if your boss says no, then you shouldn't be indignant and be like, oh my God.
Well, again, if you want to take the day off for your birthday, take the day off.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, they shouldn't build that in, I don't think, as an extra vacation day that everybody gets their birthday off. 855-752-4842. Paul from Spooner texting in, listening on WBZH, take a vacation day.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Jay from Eau Claire on WCFW. Maybe just take like 4 hours of PTO. Yes, PTO.
Mm-hmm.
Carol in Waukesha, WAUK. Good grief. If you want the day off, take it off. I'm a 1960s boomer too, and that is just stupid. 855-752-4842. Should work give you a day off for your birthday?
The texts are rolling in and people are upset about the loud rock and roll music, everybody. Oh my gosh, the clouds are being yelled at this afternoon, let me tell you.
Travis from Pierce County on WCFW. I don't expect it, but my organization does give us a day off to use any time during our birthday month. Well, that's nice.
That's all great. I feel like I don't have a dog in this fight. I feel like if you have an expectation on that, that's a little weird. It's not a common thing. It's not something we see really, I don't know, anywhere anymore. It's just a nice thing if it happens. Cool.
Well, that's a lovely extra perk, but I just don't think that should be expected.
Can I veer off for a moment and ask you a question regarding birthdays and working?
Sure.
So I was raised in the culture that if it's your birthday, you bring a treat.
Okay.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
My wife found out once, a long time ago when we first got married, I said, oh, it's my birthday. I got to go pick up some donuts or whatever. She goes, what do you mean? I'm like, you bring them treats for your birthday. Like, they don't bring in treats for your birthday? I said, No.
Oh, this is a whole new discussion.
That's never happened in the history of working.
But this goes back to school. When we were in school, if you, yes. it was your birthday, you brought cupcakes.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, you brought in a treat of some
it
sort.
It was not incumbent on the school to supply your birthday treats.
No, not at all. I would never. I mean, could you imagine how many days of the year they'd be bringing in treats?
Exactly.
For all the kids. I mean,
well, and think about what if you had 1,200 employees?
Yeah, exactly. It would just be treats galore.
Never ending treat day.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Connie from listening on WCFW. I'm a New Year's baby, so I never even thought about this.
Oh, man.
You get robbed, Connie.
Actually, I think
New Year's baby, you're robbed.
It's funny. My friend Caitlin has her birthday is on New Year's Eve, and she has a joke in her stand up bit where she says, it's really fun to see people count down from your birthday. Your birthday's over. But for her, it's like countdown until my birthday. Let's
party.
I mean, yeah, there's also a misconception that you get robbed if you're a December baby. It's not the hard, fast fact.
No.
It depends on, one, when your birthday falls in the month, and two, how generous the people around you are. I'm perfect in that sense. When I was a kid, the 6th was St. Nick's Day.
St. Nick's.
My birthday's on the 12th. Christmas is on the 25th. So I kind of...
You have enough distance.
Exactly. So I get a loving... I'd be very appreciative. I got a stocking of some stuff on the 12th. I get like a gift, maybe a gift and a card with a gift card in it. And then Christmas is... I was never passed over. I never felt duped, but...
Never got robbed.
Never felt robbed either. I just, you know, I love having a birthday in December. It's great.
See, and mine is a week after New Year's,
mm-hmm.
and it's everyone's exhausted.
Yeah.
Everyone's tired. Yeah. Everybody's done. The partying is over. It's like, yeah, what? Here's a card.
Exactly. Calvin, you are our resident young person and lazy Gen Zer, I would assume, because you're a Gen Zer, because all Gen Zers are lazy, apparently. What are your thoughts on this?
I don't have strong thoughts.
Thank you, Kelvin.
I think that both people in the clip are ridiculous, to be completely honest with you. To provide some context, that clip comes from a guy named Caleb Hammer. He has a YouTube channel called Financial Audit, where he has people on to go over their budgets. And look, first of all, I don't understand the entertainment value in that, why someone would sit to watch about another person's financial issues.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very sensationalized, and he's looking for people to
shame
this kind of clip.
Yeah.
To shame.
And to shame.
Oh, yeah. Yes. There's another gentleman out there. I can't remember his name. I know two people who've worked his system of financial, quote, freedom. And it's very, not boring, but just like, this is what you do. He has a podcast, and he's not looking to do what this guy, Caleb Hammer. I hate that name so much. Yeah, you're just like, when I watched the clip too, I'm like, oh, this was properly curated to make everyone look good or ridiculous. Because her tone is that of a young person that I think
very much
people think every young person sounds like that when they do not. But yeah, it's I think that speaks more to also the privilege of it all rather than the age of it all. Because we all know people who are older who are insufferable.
Well, that's funny that you say that. A really good friend of mine, her sister is a nurse.
Yeah.
And I want to say this happened 15, 20 years ago when she was in her 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Outraged. Outraged.
Yeah.
She would not have her birthday off, that they scheduled her to work. You're in your 40s.
Well, was that her first year there?
No. No. It's I don't get it.
I don't either.
I don't get it.
I don't either.
855-752-4842. Audio gripe / sorbet today. Mm-hmm. Should your employer be required to give you your birthday off? 855-752-4842. Jack from Merrimack on WAUK. Birthday off? Just think how unfair it would be for those born on February 29th. I'm joking. RRR.
Yeah, I think this is.
I mean, our birthday's a big deal after you turn 21.
I'm glad you asked this question, Jane. I think that birthdays are as big a deal as you can make them within a certain amount of reason. If you do birthday week, I will. Whatever. I've heard people say birthday month.
You don't get
off the planet Earth. Yeah, we don't need you.
You don't get a birthday
but
month.
I think that your birthday should be as special as you want it to be. And that means however it means. So If it's taking yourself out for a meal and going to a movie, which I've done before by myself for my birthday, then do it. Is it going to dinner with family? Then do it. Is it throwing a little cocktails after work? I just want to have some fun and see friends. However you want to do it. You want to throw a big blowout every year? You go ahead and do it. But we shouldn't be expected to give reverence to your birthday every year. Also, I have a, when people say, it's just another year, who cares? I do. It's your year. You made it another year. That's actually important to me and to a lot of people. So, you know, you don't have to celebrate it, but you also have to come in and be like, who cares? I do. I care about everyone's birthday.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, including your birthday. So when you're in January and you're like, no one cares about my birthday, here I'll be caring about your birthday.
Caring about me.
And I'm going to throw a surprise party. Oops.
No.
You, which I know you love. And see, that's the thing is I feel like your birthday is perfectly designed for who you are. Everyone's tired. No one wants to do anything. And you're like, that's fine. Send me a text.
I'm perfectly good with that. Yes, absolutely.
Solve that problem.
Well, there we go. And happy birthday, everybody.
Have you get no days off.
When we return, we'll wrap it up with this shouldn't be a thing. Today, the Mush Push look edition. You're listening to Matt Mayer on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Mayer on Air. Jane Matt Mayer, Greg Buck, resident young person Calvin on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up on the show tomorrow, our friend and colleague Todd Alba will be here. After the 9:30 news, I'm going to be on his show this afternoon. Now I'm joining Todd on Mondays at 2:30.
I wouldn't mind being there.
You can stream.
Oh God,
if you
want. I don't like that. I'm sorry, I did that. That felt weird. It was like channeling my grandma right there.
Todd Alba joining us tomorrow at 9:35 in hour number two. Will Westmoreland, who is a farmer from southwestern Missouri, is going to be joining us. We're going to talk tariffs and what he is hearing from a lot of his fellow farmers and how they're faring. Still waiting for this bailout package for our farmers. And it'll be an interesting conversation. So join us tomorrow for Todd Alba and Will Westmoreland will be joining us. Calvin, it is just about 10:54. That means it's time for
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
If you ever have a thing you think should not be, send it in to Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us. J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S. janesays@civicmedia.us. This is Run for the Border Literally Edition.
Yeah.
This is from KYGO 98.5. Calvin found this out of Colorado. Headline reads from Sean Patrick, Denver hosts 31-mile run where racers have to constantly consume Taco Bell. In Denver, there's an ultra runner event called the International Taco Bell 50K Ultra Marathon. 31 miles. The race is a loop through Denver, which includes mandatory stops at 10 local Taco Bells. You have to order something at 9 of the 10 Taco Bells, and you have to eat it. That includes a Chalupa Supreme or a Crunchwrap Supreme by the fourth stop. one Burrito Supreme or one Nachos Bel Grande by stop number 8.
Okay.
You have to finish the 31 miles within 11 hours. You have to keep all your receipts and your wrappers. Drinks do not count as food.
Okay.
Zero tolerance policy on erping.
What does that mean? Erping?
Erping.
I don't know what that means.
That would mean getting sick.
Oh, okay, gotcha. I thought
zero
that,
tolerance
I thought
policy.
That was a running thing for like burping or something. I don't know. You're reading one of the most insane, unhinged stories ever, and you expect me to know the lingo?
It's the best part of this whole break. Zero tolerance policy on vomiting. If you do, you are immediately disqualified. And you're banned from any on-course remedies, meaning no Pepto-Bismol, no Pepcid, no Alka-Seltzer, no Mylanta. You are able to use the bathroom as much as you'd like. You can only use Taco Bell restrooms along with one other approved public toilet. The Taco Bell 50K is in its 8th year. Their 8th year.
Yeah. Oh, I'm saving all of my thoughts till the end here.
Taco Bell is not affiliated with this run in any way, and they refuse to comment on it.
Oh.
Organizers say it's probably because of their legal team, because if they endorse it, then they could open themselves up to liability issues. So
lighten up, Yum Brands. My God, lighten up.
There were more than 700 runners took place at the 31-mile run where racers have to consume Taco Bell.
Where do I start? First of all, I am never going to take a runner seriously when they talk about their health and the running.
Okay.
Because when events like this exist, this isn't like a 5K. This isn't like, oh, anyway.
31 miles.
You can't just sign up and do this. You will hurt yourself if you're not a conditioned runner. Second of all, see, the thing is, okay, here's the thing is, there are people out there who can run an ultra marathon. This is nothing to them. This is like, I mean, whereas I'm built for the other side of it. I'm built for the Taco Bell portion of it. So if you, like, if you, let's say, let's make it more like a relay. Like, let's say you're an ultra runner, Jane.
Okay.
You have to run, and then I have to get to the Taco Bell, and I eat.
You do the eating.
Whatever you order, and it must be X amount to X amount of money. These amount of items, and you can't leave until I'm done eating.
I
could do that, okay. And then you high five, and you go to the next
one. And
then
I run.
But I also like that they think on a planet that somehow Pepto, Pepcid AC, Alka-Seltzer, and or Mylanta will do anything to help them in this situation.
Isn't that adorable?
Yeah, that is hilarious. And the only thing that sucks is that, well, no, they're loving it. But the fact that Taco Bell not only won't comment,
they don't want
and they
want
to be
it.
Part of it, that doesn't mean that they don't go to the Taco Bells that are franchise owned by these people. And I'm hoping that at least the organizers of the event talk to them, because these kinds of events can put pressure on maybe a busy restaurant. And if people are running in to get food and they're sitting there, I don't know. Like I'm talking about the customer service and the people who are trying to provide the food.
This is the 8th one, so I think they've got it down by now.
Also, this is the most, this is like seriously the most Denver thing. Just short of like Taco Bell, and you have to smoke a joint. This is so Denver.
That wraps up today's episode of
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
Thank you, Greg and Calvin, and all of our engineers and everyone at Civic Media. Without you, nothing works. And thank you, most of all, for calling and for texting and for listening and for watching on the live stream. It means the world. Genuinely does. I hope you find some joy today, even if it's just a little bit, and you have the chance to share it. Keep it right here. We got news coming up next, followed by Tom Hartman. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.